In 1975, Dr. Doug Rocky earned his BS from Western Illinois University, followed by an MS in 1986 and PhD from the University of Illinois in 1992. Doug Rocky is a Vietnam War and Gulf War combat veteran. He served as a member of Bowers Raiders, the 3rd U.S. Medical Commander's Nuclear, Biological, and Chemical Warfare Special Operations and Teaching Team. Bowers Raiders developed and taught the Operation Desert Storm Combat Lifesaver short course, the Medical Management of Chemical and Biological Casualties course, and the Operation Desert Storm NBC Defense refresher course. They developed standard operating procedures for decontamination and treatment of NBC casualties. This team also designed and supervised the construction of the NBC decontamination facilities and provided operations assistance throughout the echelons above Corps, and coalition forces. Major Rocky also served as the health physicist assigned to the U.S. Army depleted uranium assessment team during the Persian Gulf War, and then as the U.S. Army depleted uranium project director from 1994 through 1995. As the individual assigned by headquarters, U.S. Department of the Army, Washington, D.C., to clean up the DU mess during Gulf War, he has worked and continues his efforts to obtain medical care for affected individuals and to assure environmental remediation is completed. Although medical care and environmental remediation was recommended by Rocky and others years ago, the U.S. and British government still resist fulfilling their moral obligations. As an environmental physicist, Doug has helped write the U.S. Army's environmental compliance training programs, and the programs serve for civilian participation in environmental remediation of formerly used U.S. Department of Defense installations. Following a meeting at the Center for Disease Control in February-March of 1999, Rocky helped arrange a meeting with high administration officials, with Rosalie Bertel and Denise Nichols. At the meeting on April 16th, he told the Presidential Oversight Board that depleted uranium munitions should not be used in the Balkans or any other future conflict. During the last few years, Dr. Rocky has taught a variety of undergraduate, graduate, and high school courses in biology, environmental engineering, nuclear physics, and emergency management. He has appeared or served as a consultant for numerous documentaries and has given numerous radio interviews. Doug Rocky has been included in Who's Who in America for several years because of the impact of his continued efforts in environmental sciences and physics. His dedication to completing his assigned duties has resulted in retaliation, yet his efforts continue. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Doug Rocky.
I'm a teacher, so I'm going to move around. It's nice to be back in Seattle. Jim, thank you. First time I met Jim, the member of staff, I don't know where they are, where they picked me up at the airport. It's over a year ago. We had a 45-minute meeting. 2.5 hours later, we hadn't gone anyplace. At the end of the meeting, he got a fax from the Admiral of the Navy stating specifically, DU is not a problem, does not cause any health effects, nobody is sick. And you had just reviewed my own medical records. The lie continues. The purpose of war, there's a lot of veterans in here. The purpose of war is to kill and destroy, period. Nothing more and nothing less. And when you go to war, you come back changed forever. The doctor, two doctors have talked about what they have seen recently. We know what we've seen from the past. You come back psychologically changed, and you come back physiologically changed forever. The impact is not just on the individual soldier. The impact is on the family. The impact is on the individual. The impact is on the children, on the spouses, on the grandchildren. 2 days ago, I gave a talk in Rapid City, South Dakota. Now, you have to understand, it is a military town. U.S. Air Force, Ellsworth Air Force Base. And at the end of that talk, a woman stood up to ask the questions. There was another physician senior medical doctor, professor of medicine, sitting next to me. The head of the Department of Disabled American Veterans for South Dakota was there. And this woman stood up to ask for help, because her husband just died from Agent Orange, Vietnam veteran. One son came back from Iraq disabled, and the other son is south of Baghdad. And her family is destroyed. Every place I go, no matter who I see, no matter where I talk, the story is repeated and repeated and repeated. The issue affects us here. The issue affects our country. The issue affects the children of Iraq that Jim has described. Anybody wants to know what really happens, the book is out there, The Children of the Gulf War. If you guys have not seen the Children of the Gulf War photographic exhibit that is traveling the world, you need to see it. But let me give you a warning. When you read this book, or you see the exhibit, you're going to need both of them over there. And where's the pastor? You're going to need him too, right up there. Because when the reality comes down of what has happened, you're going to need to either cry or talk to somebody else. The same time, out there, the book called Discounted Casualties, a complete accounting, step by step, of the health and environmental effects of uranium munitions and radiological materials from the time they are mined through the processing to the manufacturing to the use and to the cleanup. This is not what you call peer-reviewed elite research. Okay? This is reality. War is about killing and about destroying, and you come back changed forever. There's a handful of us that have gone to war. A handful of us have come back. Too many didn't come back. And all of us have been changed forever. Some 30-odd years ago, I started on this path as a warrior. 1967. This is 2003, isn't it? I think so. I just got my discharge, my orders putting me into the retired military 2 weeks ago, last Wednesday. That's a few years, I think. Normal military career is 20 years. This is a little over 35. But what we have found out, no matter how long you serve, no matter how long you do things, no matter what happens to you in war, you come back physiologically and psychologically changed. And all you have to do is take a trip to the National Record Center or spend any time with Jim's staff, and you will find out that the individual military records that verify participation in battle, verify injury or sickness in battle, have disappeared. One day there was a fire. And as a consequence, the VA doctor, we got a VA doctor here, and I know we got a VA nurse over here. I already asked her for a back rub, and I showed her my card, said, treat me and you can, you know, get paid tonight. They don't have to provide the care. I had an email from a unit commander. And by the way, I share everything with Jim's staff. Fantastic, Ken Cadillac. God bless Ken and the rest of his staff. They're all here. I had a unit commander send me another email a few weeks ago and said, well, my medical records of my unit are all gone. They shipped them back and they've never been seen. Yet they were under the control of the U.S. Army from the time that they were put into a Laconics till the time they received on an installation. Never out of security, and yet they're all gone. The purpose of war is to kill and destroy, and the military will totally disregard the health and the environmental effects on the warrior, on the families, on the children, because they don't care. I wish they did. Gulf War One. It's 13 years ago, and it seems like it's only yesterday. And it never stops. The weekend Gulf War I started, some of you know, I was spending that weekend with Paul Tibbetts, little famous in world history. He flew the Enola Gay. He dropped the first atomic bomb. And Paul and I and the rest of his staff sat there and talked about the ones who were left. We were all together, and he talked about what it meant to drop an atomic bomb, what he saw, and where he is today, where he was at that time. And we talked about what was going to happen with Gulf War I. And lo and behold, because I was teaching nuclear and biological chemical warfare, because I was a special operations officer at the largest medical brigade in the U.S. Army Reserve and in the U.S. Army, because I'd been around some, 1990, 1967, some 23 years. You've got to understand, most military careers end after 20. I found myself teaching. I'm a science teacher. We were told to prepare the troops for combat using nuclear and biological chemical warfare. Why? It's real simple. We knew Iraq possessed chemical and biological weapons. No doubt, no question. We knew they possessed them. How did we know? The United States gave it to them and kept the receipt. Not question. You know, this is in the Regal Commission report, the Senate hearings, congressional hearings have verified this completely, no question whatsoever. Surprise. Go get the movie called Thanks for Grateful Nation that we did with Ted Danson and Mark Helgenberger. It's all there. No question. Georgie Bush and all those clowns up there say, Iraq possessed the weapons. We know they had it, so we're going to go to war. What they forgot to tell you is that in December of 1990, we made a conscious decision to destroy those in place, to blow them up. We knew what they had, we knew where they had, we knew how much they had, and we started to blow it up. Now, was that a surprise to Georgie Bush? Or the Prime Minister of England or Australia? No. The UN? No. Because Norman G. Schwarzkopf had wrote it in his autobiography on page 390 of It Doesn't Take a Hero. Not a surprise. So we started blowing everything up. You got to understand, they were there. But when we blew it up, it was like hitting an ice cube with a hammer, and all this stuff came back on all of the troops, and everybody started getting sick. The chemical agent alarm started going off all over theater, and people started getting sick. And you got to understand, it ain't just the Americans that get sick, or the French or the Germans. It's the Iraqis. No, it's the children that has been described what they saw, what's described in this book right here. Then we had a total misuse of pesticides. No biggie. Isn't that fun? Spray a little here, spray a little there. Everybody gets sick, and it never stops. And then, on top of that, because we knew Iraq possessed chemical weapons, we knew they possessed nerve agents, do you know who really gave them to them? Have you ever seen the photograph of Rumsfeld handing this stuff over to them? Do you know he did it? Surprise. They had the troops all take prednisolone bromide. Now, we never authorized its use at the medical command level because prednisolone bromide, or PB tablets, or NAC tablets, or anti-nerve gas pills, as they call them commonly, ain't nothing but candy, i.e., you know, little old Halloween candy, Easter candy, Valentine's Day candy. It looks like the little Valentine's hearts, but they're soaked in Black Flag and Raid. Ain't it exciting? And they all got sick. Well, when you give people pesticides to eat, you're going to have all kinds of neurological problems. This doesn't stop. It doesn't ever stop. Well, all this stuff is happening, and it not only happened during Gulf War I, but it started happening in Gulf War II again. It just gets to be real, real exciting. For example, this is October 1st. GIs fight harsh conditions in the Iraqi desert. It's hot. It's dusty. The sand's blowing all over. They don't have any respiratory protection. Got to understand, the United States Department of Defense officials, the commanders, sent our sons and daughters to war with defective equipment. Absolutely confirmed by the General Accounting Office, absolutely confirmed in the House Oversight, absolutely confirmed. By first-hand experience, all you had to do was take the gas mask and put it on. It didn't work. Just really, really neat. So when they're sucking in everything, okay? Now, you got all kinds of insects in the desert. You got to understand, the desert's a dirty place. You got insects in tents because people have got food strewn all over. You got stuff blowing all over the place. So just like in Gulf War I, they're doing the same thing in Gulf War II. These kids are wearing flea collars. Now, I don't know about you, but children shouldn't wear flea collars. They're wearing flea collars again, and the unit commanders are not stopping this nonsense. And guess what? The flea collars emit pesticides. With the misuse of pesticides, guess what? Just like in Gulf War I, they're getting sick again. It doesn't ever stop. When you go to war, the purpose of war is to kill and destroy. When you go to war, everybody is physiologically and psychologically changed. And the leaders in the Department of Defense, the individual commanders, the assistant, the secretaries in the Army, the secretariat in the defense, these guys don't care. They talked about the fact that the General Accounting Office has verified that the Department of Defense is not complying with the pre-deployment health physical assessments. They are not complying with the directive to provide those assessments at the end when they return, and they're not doing it while they're there. Well, it ain't no personification saying the Department of Defense. No, it's Dr. Michael Kilpatrick. You want to put responsibility and understand who's calling the shots, guys, and hold them accountable. The other guy that called the shots up there is Dr. Bernard Rosker. How many times have you had him before you? How many times has he lied to you? Chris Shays, Bernie Sanders got so sick and tired of it, they'd have him before the House Oversight and they'd have him before the Armed Forces. The guys just got up there and lied and they walked away. The Department of Defense officials responsible for this are totally disregarding congressional directives with total immunity. Surprise, what's new? This makes me a little bit angry. A whole lot angry. So we got all this stuff happening. Then Iraq, God bless Iraq, I mean, we're at war. They light those oil well fires on fire, and the complex organic compounds, heavy metals, carcinogens that are released in incomplete combustion of the oil well fires, and everybody got sick. And we put out a directive from the Theater Command headquarters requiring full respiratory and skin protection for anybody exposed to oil well byproducts. The equipment doesn't work anyhow. And everybody got sick. Then lo and behold, we get down to this thing. And we're going to war. We're going to use the best weapon we have. I mean, you got to understand, the purpose of war is to kill and destroy. Uranium munitions come around. I had never heard of uranium munitions until right before Christmas in 1990. I'd never heard of them. Surprise. Why would they teach anybody about this munition? Why would they teach any of the doctors or medical personnel how to treat the casualties? Why would they teach anybody how to clean up the environmental mess? They didn't. I got a letter from Colonel Charles Day at the Pentagon, senior health physicist. And he said, "Dear Doug," when my top boss says, "Dear Doug," I know we better listen. And he said, "You better start thinking about the health and environmental effects of uranium munitions." And I go, "What are these? I never heard of them." Well, it didn't take too long to find out about them. Completion of the ground war. They're shooting this place up. What they don't tell you is the majority of U.S. casualties, both that died and were injured during Gulf War I, were due to friendly fire. And guess what's happening today? Again, friendly fire. Correct, Doctor? You both saw the wounds of friendly fire casualties, didn't you? Friendly fire is uncalled for. It happens because these clowns are Ramboed up, and they see a target way off there, and they pull the trigger. Now, I've been hunting a long time, okay? And anybody else that hunts in here knows that you don't pull the trigger unless you got your target fully verified and fully identified. But when you're Ramboed up believing everybody out there is out to kill you, and they just, i.e., 9-1-1, the Iraq was involved in the World Trade Center, the Pentagon. Give me a break. Al-Qaeda was never even involved. Everybody shoots everything that moves. So anyhow, they shot up with uranium munitions. All of a sudden, I get called down to the command headquarters. It's totally astonishing. I still haven't figured out why it all happened yet. And I get ordered to go up and clean up the depleted uranium mess. Now, this isn't something that came out of the wind on. There's a direct order here signed by the chief of staff for a central command. Now, you've got to understand, when the chief of staff for central command signs the order on behalf of the commander, for the commander, that's General Schwarzkopf. By name assignment to clean it up. Well, I'm still finishing my job. I keep hoping to get real mad at me, do something. I keep saying, you want to revoke this order? See, right there? U.S. Army Central Command for the commander, okay? Doug Rocky, clean up the DU mess by name. I go, revoke the order, please. You know, please revoke the order. You think Nuremberg trials were interesting? It's there. They knew it was a problem. So we got up there and we got everything put together. We started cleaning it up, and all of a sudden I started getting two other memorandums. The first memorandum came from Colonel Greg Lyle at the Defense Nuclear Agency. Now, you've got to understand, these are the real bomb guys, okay? They do the analysis, set everything up. And Colonel Lyle wrote, quote, "As explosive ordnance disposal, ground combat units, and civil populations of Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq come increasingly in contact with DU ordnance, we must prepare to deal with potential problems. Toxic war souvenirs, political fear, and post-conflict cleanup are some of the issues that must be addressed. Alpha particles from uranium oxide dust from expended rounds is a health concern, but beta particles from fragments in intact rounds is a serious health threat." Okay, one more time. Beta particles from fragments and intact rounds is a serious health threat. Now, Jim, you found out that they're not only firing them right off the coast of Seattle, but they're shipping them through downtown Seattle and putting them out on the ships, right? Confirmed, correct, sir? And I went to the office when the admiral sent him a memo and stated very specifically, there's no health effects, it's not a hazard, it's not dangerous. You want to know why? I can give you the answer why. Los Alamos, New Mexico, 1 March 1991, direct quote, "The effectiveness of depleted uranium penetrators. There is a relatively small amount of lethality data for uranium penetrators, either the tank-fired long version or the GAWI 8 round fired from the A-10 close-air support aircraft. The recent war has likely multiplied the number of DU rounds fired at targets by orders of magnitude. It is believed that the penetrators were very effective against Iraqi armor. However, assessments of such will have to be made. There has been and continues to be a concern regarding the impact of DU on the environment. Therefore, if no one makes a case for the effectiveness of DU on the battlefield, depleted uranium rounds may become politically unacceptable and thus be deleted from the arsenal. If DU penetrators prove their worth during our recent combat activities, then we should assure their future existence through service and Department of Defense proponency. If proponency is not garnered, it is possible that we stand to lose a valuable combat capability. I believe we should keep this sensitive issue in mind whenever after-action reports are written. Respectfully, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Zeem." Okay. I got an initial memo saying you better think about health and environmental effects. I get a second memo that says it's not only a health threat, it's a serious health threat. And I get a written order from a colonel telling me to lie. This is a church. I ain't messing with this guy's boss. The guys in the Department of Defense, Kilpatrick, Roger, Dax, and Cherry, don't care. The unit commanders don't care. Because the purpose of war is to kill and destroy. Now, the congressman read a response to his inquiry from all the way up, and they said, no effects, no problem. Then why are all these memos out here? Something's really wrong in the state of Denmark. Well, we got up there to start cleaning everything up, and got a great medal for doing this stuff, you know, that and a cup of coffee, you know, what the heck. Main thing we did here, and this is medal that I got from the theater commander. This last one's real important. Advised medical authorities as to the hazards of depleted uranium contamination and recommended monitoring programs for affected individuals. Now, the theater commander ain't going to give the theater health physicist a medal for making that recommendation unless there's a serious health problem, which we already knew from Colonel Lyle anyhow. But guess what? You know why Colonel Lyle knew? Because we knew it back in 1943. Because in 1943, you got to understand, I'm a physicist, guys. Condit, Compton, and Urey, now these are three of the five greatest physicists in the history of mankind, told General Groves to use radioactive materials in uranium to contaminate air, water, and soil. The original dirty bomb directive. And they did it because they knew very well, quote, no effective protective clothing for personnel seems possible at development. In other words, you're going to kill them. You're going to make them sick. What's the purpose of war? To kill and destroy? So you use the weapon that does it? You don't want these guys to come out alive. You don't want them to become better. You want to make sure nothing happens. So what you make sure is they can't protect themselves. There ain't no magic thing I put over my bod and says, don't hurt me. You know, there's only one person, he or she, that runs this place can put that shield up. But they also known very well, and they told General Leslie Groves, is, quote, there is no known effective methods of treatment for such a casualty. They knew it in 1943. Colonel Lyle knew it in 1991. Colonel Zeme knew it in 1991. But the President of the United States and everybody else right before this war, they stated very specifically the consequences and the recommendations and the warnings about the health and environmental effects of uranium munitions are Iraqi propaganda. Uh-huh. Not hardly. They also said right there flat out that the injury would manifest as bronchial irritation coming on within a few hours to a few days and permanent lung damage would appear months later. That's what happened to me. Medscape, Medline. October 1st, 2003. Now, you guys are already seeing all kinds of respiratory problems. We got thousands coming back with respiratory problems. We got them dying from respiratory problems, right? We just used over 2,000 tons of uranium munitions in Gulf War II. Medline, October 1st, 2001. The Department of Defense, i.e. Reed Dr. Michael Kilpatrick, has advised Central Command personnel that cigarette smoking, particularly the initiation of smoking, might be associated with the development of all the severe acute respiratory problems. 30th October, 1943. It is felt that injury would manifest itself as bronchial irritation coming on a few hours or a few days and permanent lung damage appearing in months later. And then we got, on top of all of that stuff, we go to war and we deliberately destroy a nation. We destroy their entire infrastructure, agriculture, industry, education, and medicine. Now, all you got to do is go out to your garage or go out under, look under your sink or go down to where you work or go out to a farm and look at all of the hazardous materials that exist there. And you blow all that stuff up and you release it and you spread it all over the place. And then you got the uranium munitions all over the place. And thousands of our sons and daughters are already sick over there. A bunch have died. This is separate from the bullet wounds and the grenades. And Medscape says, DOD has advised Central Command personnel that cigarette smoking. There are some really lousy things happening. They know what's occurring. They know why it's happening. Because guess who the bad guys are? There was no justification for the invasion of Afghanistan. There was no justification for the invasion of Iraq. The real justification for the invasion of Kosovo is, if you look at a map, was the fact they wanted to control the lead mines in the south of Kosovo. Afghanistan, to go in there, was completely about putting in the oil pipeline out of the inner Soviet republics through Afghanistan down to Pakistan. Congressional directive, February 12th of 1998, to overthrow the Taliban, to install a government in order to put the pipeline in. Surprise. So now we have all of this stuff come together. We've got uranium munitions have been used, and you have to understand, each individual uranium round is real unique, okay? The tank fires a uranium round that's basically a giant pencil, a giant dart, okay? That giant dart, that giant pencil, is 3/4 inch in diameter. It's 18 inches long, and it's over 10 pounds of solid uranium. It's not coated, it's not tipped, it's solid uranium. And we fired over 15,000 of those during Gulf War I. And then the A-10 fires a 30-millimeter bullet. Each individual bullet is over 3/4 pound of solid uranium. And the A-10 fires at a rate of 4,000 rounds a minute. Then we got the 20-millimeter. Who's sitting on the 20-millimeter DU round over here? Somebody's sitting on it. There it is. Oh, we moved it. Right here. I had you worried, didn't I? Where are they firing this one? Where are they firing this one? You can walk there. This is what they're firing right here in Seattle. You want to eat any food coming out of the bay out here off the coast? This is what they're firing off of the coast right now. This is what they're shipping through downtown Seattle. This is what's stored at the Coast Guard station downtown Seattle. Glenn Milner's verified it. They've got a lawsuit filed with the NRC and the Navy right now. The Navy's out there firing these twice a week. But they not only do it off the coast of Seattle, they're doing it in Chesapeake Bay. I hope you don't like crab. That bring it home to you? Arrogant assholes. To practice, to make sure their guns are sighted in. Okay? But you got to remember, the U.S. Navy told Congressman James McDermott that there's no health or environmental effects from this. But Colonel Greg Lyle said it's a serious health threat in 1991. And of course, they said that back in 1943. And then we not only use these, and this thing is 220 grams, by the way. 220 grams is just right at a half a pound. A half a pound of solid uranium-238. Thousands of rounds. Well, you know, how many, you know, we shot a lot down in Vieques, Puerto Rico, over in Okinawa, all over the place, Chesapeake Bay, up in Nova Scotia, down off of San Francisco. Hey, wherever the Navy is, they got that gun, the Navy Phalanx. They're going to shoot it. They're also shooting the 25-millimeter, too, on the deck guns. Not a question. And it doesn't stop. Now, not only on that, during Gulf War I, we had the Atom and the Pedum. These are cluster bombs. They're landmines. Okay? You drop them down, they sit there until the kid walks up and steps on them, and they blow up. or sit until the U.S. troops walk up on it and they blow up, or Iraqis do, or somebody else and they blow up. Doesn't give for a good day. And we spread those all over the place. Even in Kosovo, that marketplace in Kosovo was hit with uranium rounds. They, you know, the scientists that have measured it. Landmines. And then the cruise missiles and the bunker busters. You guys watch on Gulf War II, downtown Baghdad, where the bombs came in. You see in the flames and the sparks. And then you see the metal sparklers going off all over the place, lasting and lasting and lasting. You know, like fireworks, you know, with the cricklers that come down on the 4th of July. The only thing that does that is uranium. Conventional explosives don't do that. Downtown Baghdad, residential areas all over, is totally littered with uranium rounds. I mean, they went over and saw it and they measured it. Larry Johnson here tonight? Larry here. Larry went over and did a full report on it. They measured it. They brought the stuff back. Photographic evidence. The Japanese have been over there. They came back, did the analysis. Other congressional staff have gone over there, done the measurements. No question. We took our solid radioactive waste, and not only did we contaminate the coast right off of Seattle and leave this stuff in downtown Seattle, but we spread it all over Iraq during two wars. And people are sick. When you go to war and you fire a DU round and this thing comes flying down, you got to understand, this DU round comes out of that gun and it's flying over 3,000 feet per second. It's on fire and it's already fragmenting. And you got uranium dust spread all over the place from the time that it comes out that bore, that the front of the gun muzzle. Well, it's actually happening when you stick it in the back end. Until it hits. Now, when this round comes flying through the air, it hits something. As it hits something, it starts to penetrate. And about 40% of it breaks off into spalling, what we call shrapnel. Now, that spalling and that shrapnel is a size from less than 0.1 micron on up to the size of marbles. Now, 0.1 micron, the majority of this uranium dust is in the range of 0.1 to 0.3 micron. It's been known since 1940s in the Manhattan Project. The top health particle physicist for the Manhattan Project is still alive. And I've talked to him. He verified the Groves Memorandum. He verified that the particulates are that small, and they've always known it. Now, at 0.1 micron, that is less than the inner diameter of a red blood cell, isn't it, doctor? Guess what? You have a particulate that acts like a gas, and it goes all over the body, and no wonder we're sick. Something's really wrong. Well, we've gone on, we're trying to get all this stuff put together. We're putting all our reports together. We're come back. Now, I knew there was a problem. We started cleaning it up, but our team started getting sick right away. The respiratory problem started within about a day or two. The rashes started in a couple days. The first cancers in the back of the nasopharyngeal passageway on our team started within 9 months. And that guy had the first tent, the first bunk, away downwind from all, just where we had the stuff trashed. I had the second bunk. We're just in a tent. We're just in a canvas bunk. Now, we already know the gas masks aren't going to work. We knew it then, but of course we didn't recognize it because, you know, we were believing the Department of Defense scientists and doctors. But you could smell it, you could taste the burnt uranium. It's totally distinctive. Well, we started putting all our reports together, we came back, and the only thing I can describe is, oh my God, everybody's sick. Now, the congressman talked about the individual in Bradley, that's Sergeant Jerry Wheat. Jerry Wheat was in a Bradley fighting vehicle, was hit twice by 220-millimeter DU rounds, each round over 10 pounds of solid uranium. Well, he came out alive, but his driver didn't. I scraped that damn kid's brains off of that vehicle with a 6-inch putty knife and put him into a bag. Think about that. Now, I ordered Jerry Weech medical care for his commander, set it up all the way through the medical command staff. My theater, the theater occupational health physician, who was my commander, who issued the directive for medical care, and Jerry Weech never got it. He never got the medical care. Even though we issued the directive for medical care. You know why Jerry Weech never got the medical care? Jerry Weech developed tumors surrounding the uranium shrapnel left in his body. That's because in 1993, Colonel Eric Daxon, my old boss, put out the protocol for monitoring Gulf War veterans with embedded depleted uranium fragments. Quote, "No compelling evidence was found in the literature review to change the current surgical criteria for uranium fragment removal." Quote, "They left it in to test us." Quote, "They wanted to," quote, "quantification and documentation of the toxicological heavy metal toxicity in radiological cancer and tissue necrosis risks of embedded uranium fragments by, A, number one, measuring and documenting uranium levels in each soldier using in vivo and in vitro measurement techniques. Two, determining the parameters and models needed to translate uranium levels in the body into estimates of increased cancer risk from exposure. Three, comparing the clinical course of the body's response to depleted uranium fragments with that of other non-depleted uranium fragments to determine whether clinically significant differences exist due to either the chemical or radiological properties of depleted uranium. And four, determining the risk of chronic kidney toxicity due to long-term chronic exposure to elevated levels of uranium," end quote. Now, I was born right after World War II. Some of you were born at the same time. Some of you were born during the war before. I thought Mengele was dead. No, he wrote this directive in March of 1993. They also stated very specifically continuous medical testing, and if anybody is excreting uranium at a total greater than 250 micrograms of total uranium per day in their urine, they have to go through a whole series of medical testing weekly and the potential for kidney toxicity. This was issued, this is a directive from 1993. That's what they did to U.S. friendly fire casualties. That's what they do to all of our coalition. That's what they did to the Iraqis. That's what they're doing to the children. And they made me a guinea pig. Quote, "Continuous weekly medical testing," and all the tests are listed here, "for anybody excreting uranium at greater than 250 micrograms per day with kidney toxicity. When I was director of the Depleted Uranium Project in 1994, we did testing in a Nevada test site, Mercury, Nevada. I took my team out there, we put the research together, we blew up equipment with uranium munitions in it, we burned it, we fired at the stuff, we shot stuff up, and we went out there and we tested and we measured. We determined what the extent of contamination is, we verified that this uranium munition dust will resuspend, we verified that the contamination around a single vehicle or building that struck is so great that you must wear full respiratory and skin protection within 50 meters for eternity unless it's totally cleaned up. We verified that the only way to clean it up is to pick up that building structure or vehicle completely, put it into a massive big hole, pick up all the spent penetrators." He's got a whole box of these suckers.
Dollar a piece.
Hey, this is a deal. You got to understand. You can buy these right now, or you could call with your credit card to an 800 number. All you need is a MasterCard to buy them. No. Pakistan Ordnance is selling it. The Soviets are selling it. The Department of Defense is selling it. But these are a dollar a piece. the local surplus store. That's downtown Seattle. Leadwood. Okay, here we go. When I came out of the field, the U.S. Department of Energy collected my urine samples. November of 1994. The test results came back in January 26 of 1995 that I was personally excreting uranium at over 1,400 micrograms per day. They never told me for 2.5 years. They never put me into testing. Medical records are here. You can see all the kidney problems, all the respiratory, all the rashes, and everything else. That's what they did. Well, in August of 1993, General Eric Shinseki, i.e., anybody knows, he is just retired as the general of the Army who led this war, issued the personal order to provide adequate training for personnel to come in contact with DOE contingent, complete medical testing of personnel who were exposed, and develop the environmental cleanup procedures. Signed, Eric Shinseki, General, U.S. Army. Now, we just went to war. We use uranium munitions again. We used them the first time they were used. We can verify, absolutely verify, medically, photographically, on-site measurements was by the Israelis during the 73 Arab-Israeli War. Then we used them in Gulf War I, over 350 tons. Then, on top of that, we were going to use in Somalia in 93. We got to stop, but we got a medical directive out. Then we used them in 94 in the Balkans. 95 and 96 in Okinawa. February 99 in Vieques, Puerto Rico, getting ready to go blow up Kosovo. Then the Balkans in 99, and as you already heard, we tried to stop that. And then Gulf War II. And they're still shooting them up as we speak. But, again, what did they say? Official White House site and everybody, you heard what they read, the congressman's response. There's no health or environmental effects. Well, we know the medical directive from 1993 requires medical care for uranium exposures within 24 hours for everyone, quote, being in the midst of smoke from DU fires resulting from the burning of vehicles uploaded with depleted uranium munitions or depots in which depleted uranium munitions are being stored, working with environments containing depleted uranium dust or residues from depleted uranium fires, being within a structure or vehicle was struck by depleted uranium munition. This is October 1993, a written congressional Pentagon directive, Department of Defense directive, went to everybody in the military. This is not a question. This is a written order, just like General Shinseki's was a written order. Just like the order I got from Michael Zeem to lie was a written order. Now, if this is a requirement for every one of the U.S. troops that are exposed, then under you better do the same thing for all the coalition troops, our allies, but you better do the same thing for all the Iraqis. I don't want to find out when he or she that runs this place gets mad because we didn't do it for the children. That criteria doesn't change depending upon who you are, but the Department of Defense and the individuals responsible for it right now are totally disregarding our recommendations. They're totally disregarding their own written directives. They've totally disregarded the United Nations directives. They've totally disregarded the British Royal Society's recommendations. Because the purpose of war is to kill and destroy, and they totally disregard about the health and environmental effects of war. Well, we started cleaning this stuff up, and we put the programs together, because all of this stuff, I ended up going back on active duty as the director of the DU project, as I mentioned. And what I learned and what I saw came to real simple conclusions. Number one, you can't clean it up. It took our team 3 months to clean up 24 vehicles, that's 15 Abrams tanks and 9 Bradley fighting vehicles for shipment back to the United States. It took 3 years for the team at the Defense Consolidation Facility, Savannah River, South Carolina, to process 24 tanks for disposal. We buried a whole bunch more in the desert with the body parts. Yeah, I can't take them out because this is unexploded contamination of all types. And we've littered the whole place with thousands and thousands of vehicles and buildings, and we've walked away and refused to clean it up, refused to clean up our own radiological contamination that we can't dispose of here in the United States, so we throw it into another nation. And we refuse to provide medical care. And I keep calling Central Command in Florida and sending emails over to the command in Iraq saying, when are you going to do it? Here's all the written directives. Here's the references. Here's the environmental cleanup procedures, the minimum we could do, and they refuse to do it. I keep calling the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Dr. Kilpatrick, and they refuse to do it. Now, Dr. Kilpatrick is the ones in charge of all those physical exams that the doctor talked about required for pre-deployment, during deployment, and post-deployment exams. The United States General Accounting Office verified in the report released on the 29th or 30th, they're not complying with the written directives. You mad yet? You know, so we go on and on and on. We tried to get everything together, but what's real interesting is back in 1992, while we got a written directive to do a study on uranium munitions, this is health and environmental consequences, uranium munitions on the battlefield, for the U.S. Army at the U.S. Army Environmental Policy Institute, co-located with the U.S. Army's main lab, guess where I was working? They'd called me from the university, come over and clean up the environmental messes. We got a written directive, the directive's up here, to study this stuff, but a written directive signed by the Assistant Secretary of the Army, Walker, stating, figure out ways to reduce the toxicity of DU. A written directive. But at the same time, I also got another written directive. This came down from the Secretary of State through the Army Command, down to the commander at Cyril, and told Colonel David Lindsay, Major Gary Brinkley, and myself to write the theater cleanup plan, i.e., quote, depleted uranium contaminated equipment and facilities recovery plan. A specialized synergistic operations team familiar with the identification, isolation of, salvage, or dispose of depleted uranium contaminated equipment. Focus on team will be to develop, disseminate, and supervise reasonable, achievable procedures to salvage or dispose of depleted uranium contaminated equipment. Now, Ellen already knows who this order, we've got the order to clean, write this for, don't you? Which company? Anybody got a guess who we were ordered to write this for? What company? Halliburton. Ain't it nice when a plan comes together? You see, it's up, you tell them what to use, and then you get the theater cleanup plan. Now, which company got the cleanup plan for the Balkans? Halliburton. Which company's got the cleanup plan for Afghanistan? Which company's got the cleanup plan for Iraq? And that's a no-bid contract. Ain't it nice when a plan comes together? When you go to war, the purpose of war is to kill and destroy. You totally disregard the health and environmental effects. You totally disregard the health and environmental effects not only on our nation's sons and daughters, but you totally disregard the health effects on all of our allies, and you totally disregard the health effects on the nation that we blow up, i.e. blew up, in order to save. And you wonder why troops are dying over there? Think about this. The Canadian Army came on down here and set up a roadblock out here, said you can't come in this church, you can't go into your house. They broke into your house, took away your guns, took away everything, searched your women, you took away your job. You just might even use a meat cleaver on these guys. Doesn't take a whole lot to figure this thing out. Well, the orders, the directives go on and on. Today what we have is an environmental and medical catastrophe. We can no longer deal with the health environmental effects of war. We can no longer provide medical care for our troops. We have totally disregarded directives because we don't want, i.e., the correlation between injuries and exposures and illnesses to happen because of liability. Because once the liability comes back on our own troops, you have the liability for our allies, but you have the liability for the enemy troops, if they're really an enemy, but then you have the liability for the children. And it never stops. The post-deployment health assessment, it's right here. I got a copy of it right in my fingertips, but they're not doing it. I'm tired of, no matter where I go, at home, in the street, of parents coming up to me and troops coming up to me. They just came back and they're sick or injured and they can't get medical care. You got to wait at the Department of Veteran Affairs to get medical care sometimes for 6 months. When you need surgery, they argue about whether or not you have to have the surgery. It's time for it to stop. It's totally time for it to stop. Today, we can no longer deal with the health and environmental effects of war. But we can no longer deal with health and environmental effects of technology and the use of munitions, not only in the battle zones, but right here in Seattle. Ladies and gentlemen, war is obsolete. I just retired, but I'm here to tell you, from now on, and I'm asking you to help me, I'm going to be a warrior, but I need your help. It's now a warrior for peace. Thank you.